may not be so independent after all. A US congressman has questioned the impartiality of factcheck.org, which is supposed to tackle vaccine disinformation because it's indirectly funded by jab manufacturer Johnson & Johnson.
Who pays the paychecks of the fact-checkers? The vaccine fact-checkers at factcheck.org, who claim to be independent, are funded by an organisation that holds over $1.8 billion of stocks in a vaccine company and is run by a former director of the Centres for Disease Control.
The fact-checking account responded to the accusations by making clear its funding sources. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is one of the benefactors and holds billions in Johnson & Johnson stock. The foundation's CEO is Richard Besser, who was a former acting director of the Centre for Disease Control. But factcheck.org claims there's no interference in its editorial decisions and the foundation's views aren't necessarily reflected in its decisions. But author and liberal studies expert Michael Rechtenwald believes such connections pose risks to the public.
This is absolute collusion on the part of vaccine manufacturers having funding the fact checkers on social media. So we're actually getting to the point where people's lives are being endangered. We've lost all confidence in the social media and our mainstream media entirely. Anything that comes into contradiction with the leftist agenda is deemed misinformation. People are now not able to get information about what's best for their health, including the detriments of the vaccine.
Interesting. So the people who are out there being quoted in the New York Times and the mainstream media in general and the governmental agencies, this is disinformation, misinformation, false information. They're aligned completely with Big Pharma. Gross conflict of interest, trust nothing they say. Also, wasn't it Peter Daszak, the person who's employed by Anthony Fauci at the Wuhan lab and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill to fund gain-of-function research, who admitted that in a television interview in Hong Kong, described it in detail. And now Fauci's saying he knew nothing about it, but now they're redacted. Emails of Fauci gave us some indication, but now they have the non-redacted. Nothing's been blacked out. And there it is. Fauci's known along for at least 6 years about gain-of-function research being done at the Wuhan lab. He's been funding. He has perjured himself. He's lied to the American public, the world public. The media is protecting him. Members of Congress are protecting him. The White House is protecting him. Why? We're going to start today a very important series, possibly one of the most important series in this program's history. All this week, we're going to deconstruct every piece of misinformation and replace it with actual peer-reviewed quality information from an independent, non-affiliated, non-political, non-ideological medical doctors and scientists. For example, today, you're going to hear, and this is for my Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox audience, of which a lot of them listen. A lot of them come to lecture. I lecture before whole synagogues packed with the ultra-Orthodox. And they're confused. But one of their own, Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, Z-E-L-E-N-K-O, he's board certified. He specializes in internal medicine, family medicine. He has been one of the very first who started looking at what can we do to save lives. The patient in front of me is who I'm responsible for, not some dictate coming out of Anthony Fauci or one of the bureaucracies in Washington. So he's going to give us his insights today. So for the ultra-Orthodox or Orthodox in this audience who want that information and know there is hope that lives have been saved and there are hundreds of other physicians going to him to get his training, they in turn have worked with others. It's estimated that millions of patients today are alive because of this man. You've never heard of him. You've never seen him. You will today. Then we're going to have a short clip, as I promised last week, and we actually had short clips, five-minute, four-minute, six-minute clips of mainstream Orthodox pro-vaccine medical doctors telling you why they have problems with everything that Anthony Fauci has said. Today, they're going to take a look at what actually goes on in your body when you get the vaccine. I know a lot of you are fearful. You're very concerned, and rightly so. You don't know what to do. Lose your job, have to move, not go back to school. Well, we're going to deal with that. I'll talk about that later in the show, but he will give you one more reason to do your homework before you get the vaccine. Whether you get the vaccine or not is your business. All right, and then also today we always begin with the latest on health and healing. And we're going to begin today by taking a look at cacao. That's chocolate. And it's rich in flavanols, and that contributes to faster oxygen uptake kinetics. That means it's improving your blood flow. What happens when you sit? What happens when you sit with your legs crossed or bent? Very bad, because you cut off circulation to the extremities. That ends up in varicosities and spider veins, little purple splotchy veins, and frequently intermittent claudication, pains in the calf. So just being able to get up and walk around and exercise throughout the day is important. Now, a bioactive compound found in cacao powder, chocolate powder, we're talking about the dark chocolate, not with sugar, not with dairy, like a milk chocolate, that could help middle-aged adults enjoy exercise. And that's important. Remember, this is an all-natural plant nutrient that's in the cacao beans. And the flavanols, F-L-A-V-A-N-O-L-S, are found in abundance in cacao powder and to a lesser extent in dark chocolate. And it can be consumed just by eating a piece of natural organic chocolate. And because cacao flavanols have a vasodilatory effect, helping to increase blood flow, in lay language, they've been shown to prevent blood clots and even combat memory decline. Now, a team, and Saul, if you're listening, buddy, Saul's 95 and really on a rigid health protocol, though his wife said he never sticks to anything. Saul, stick with this, or your wife's going to divorce you after almost 60 years. You got to do this. Have yourself 2 ounces of organic 70% dark chocolate each day. Also, of course, vitamin E will improve blood flow and reduce blood clots. And vitamin C will thin the blood naturally and prevent clotting. Green juices, celery, cucumber with some lime and lemon. That's another great thing. It also helps alkalize the body and helps with pain in the joints. And then, of course, you can get into the superstars like coenzyme Q10 3 times a day, magnesium twice a day, L-carnitine twice a day, and high heat yield 1 capsule of cayenne capsule. Then with potassium around, they come in 99 milligram capsules, but drinking a pint of coconut water each day gives you around more or less between 400 and 500 milligrams of potassium, which is really good for your heart. Really, really good. Magnesium is number 1, potassium is number 2. So you see, there's a lot we can do. Now throw in some chocolate, and it tastes good. All right? So just something to help us get more blood into your muscles. So when you go out for that morning walk, and you've had your health shake, and you've had all your nutrients, now you do a brisk walk, you're really pumping that blood, and that helps everything in your body work better. Also, it helps prevent you from having thick blood, which is more likely to have a clotting factor. This was published in the European Journal of Applied Physiology. Now, separately from the Karolinska Institute in Sweden, which is one of the most respected scientific institutes in the world, they found that vitamin D reduces the need for opiates in palliative cancer. Every day from around the world, I receive messages. The latest is from Australia, from a physician who is 45 years in practice, whose wife has terminal cancer. So I gave him a protocol and went over everything with him, and hopefully they apply that as quickly as possible. The top of my list was hyperbaric therapy or oxygen therapy. And by the way, you don't have to have the hyperbaric oxygen tank, because there's a whole lot of new science showing that the mask, as far as breathing in, will give you the same equivalency in oxygen as if you're in a hyperbaric tank. And so that's now what I'm advocating. I'll get more on that in an upcoming program. Because I use hyperbaric, I believe it's terrific. I've seen what happens, not just burn patients and people with fungus and gangrene, which is able to be treated, but people with cancer, herpes, AIDS, and all of these important viruses, including Epstein-Barr, cytomegalovirus. It can help with all those, hepatitis. In any case, so every day I'm talking about cancer, generally end-stage cancer, where everything has been tried and it's not worked. But here they had a placebo-controlled, randomized study, especially when people have traditional therapy, what happens? Gross fatigue, because the chemotherapy, which causes cancer, by the way, and radiation, which causes cancer, they can shrink cancer, and sometimes they can cure cancer, and I'm all for that. But that's the minimal amount of success. If it really worked, why are we losing this year nearly 600,000 people to cancer, all of whom tried orthodox therapy, all of them? So if you're really going to be honest as a physician, a nurse, a scientist, shouldn't you walk away for a moment, go to neutral, go away from your cancer institute, no matter how intentionally good they are, and I believe most are. I believe almost all the people working in cancer want to see their patients survive and thrive. But then when you start seeing that the largest room in your hospital is the morgue, and you start saying, okay, I've been here for 20 years. Now, if we just took an average, let's go low. Let's go 400,000, not 600,000, 400,000 a year, all right, over the last, let's say, well, if you're in oncology, I speak with a lot of people, and one of them has been in what Jan has been in 25 years. So 25 years at 400,000 people dying per year, you're at 10 million dead people who trusted you, believed in you. I'm sure you did everything you could. But when you cause or a part of 10 million failures, shouldn't there be someone within the halls of medicine, some wise person who says, you know something, maybe we should look a different way? No, but that's not going to happen because of all of the money coming in from Wall Street, hedge funds, equity partners who are buying up all of these medical businesses everywhere, consolidating them. And they have no background in medicine, but they have a lot of background in making money. And suddenly your treatment is more, the protocols are more narrow. Doctors then sell their private practices for one lump sum. And the general rule is the least you should get is 3 years worth of profit. The average is probably 5, even 10 years if you have a good patient load. And suddenly the patients don't know you're no longer an independent person making independent choices. You're going based upon a protocol. It's just like the insurance gestures. The insurance company decides yes or no, we're going to pay for that treatment. And for decades, they didn't pay for things that actually work, like prevention. They didn't pay for nutrients and the things were actually curing people. But they would pay for other things. And the pharmaceutical industry is hand in glove with that group. So you're going to see all medicine get more expensive, not less, because they have not done the right thing and go to universal health care. And they won't. Even, mind you, the people calling themselves progressive, they're not progressive, they're regressive. They're all about honoring corporate interests and not taking the profit out of any single system in government. In fact, loading more in. After all, it's not their money. And what do they care how much debt we have? I'll get to that on another program. I've got whole commentary lined up to show you how bankrupt we are at every level, and we'll never get out of it. So why not talk about that for a moment? And then get ahead of that curve. But in any case, here's an article published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer, and they found that those who took the vitamin D had a greater palliative phase, meaning they didn't feel the pain, they didn't have sensitivity to the infections, they didn't have the depression, they didn't have the low self-rated quality of life. All of those are good. If you could get rid of the pain, sensitivity to infection, fatigue, depression, and low sense rated quality of life by taking vitamin D instead of taking OxyContin and dying. You realize how many people die each year taking that crap? More Americans die every year from taking opiates than the entire time of the Vietnam War. In fact, this year it may even be almost double that. But you see, you know the game is afoot. You know who's controlling something when common sense and reason says, if you're not doing it and it's not right and it's not working, change. And normally people would. They'd change. Not in medicine. Medicine never changes. Medicine is completely grabbed by the throat and throttled by special interest. Now doctors are pushing back, saying, I'll practice medicine in the best interest of the patient by first doing no harm. Well, then close down all the cancer institutes in the United States until you can prove by quality, independent peer review that your patients are living a longer life and not dying from the treatment. Anyhow, vitamin D. And finally, University of Paris, published in the British Medical Journal this week, increasingly poor physical function from age 65 is linked to increased risk of death. So today I counseled an old friend from 25 years ago. And the guy's made a lot of, as most people do, a lot of inappropriate choices. He's got a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. So today we start day one. He's taking photographs, and in about 3 months and 3 months after that, and then 3 months and 3 months after that, we're going to see what changes occur. The goal is no disease at all. At 65, having a body that is what he had at 30, and getting DNA samples and then genes and seeing with the biological markers how much younger we can make him biologically. He's agreed to be in this. That's all mentioned about him, and he started already. And so just remember, a lot of people, 60, 65, they're way older that and biologically. All those mistakes you made, they add up. But the good news is we can de-age. So in this one, they're just saying, quote, increasing poor physical motor function from around the age 65 is associated with an increased risk of death. Signs of increasing decline, such as difficulty getting up from a chair, getting dressed, emerge up to 10 years before death. So all these things you're seeing now, they're all warning signs saying change everything right now. Well, I hope that people take that warning. Oh, and by the way, remember I've been talking for years and years about the tipping points, and when we reach these tipping points, we're in for a big pain, a lot of hurt. Unfortunately, it just didn't seem to resonate with a lot of people. Well, tomorrow I'm going to talk about how they're now saying that we've reached the tipping points and it's a massive crisis, and what do we do about it? And this is mainstream science in climatology. In any case, for those of you using Garcinia cambogia, it's a new proposal out of the University of Houston to treat and prevent kidney stones. That's good. By the way, it's a natural fruit extract. And it's capable of dissolving calcium oxalate crystals. So for those of you who had that, and that was published in Nature, there's a compound in there. It's called hydroxycitrate, or HCA. It's an effective inhibitor of calcium oxalate crystal growth that under certain conditions is actually able to dissolve these crystals. Good information. Important when you consider how many people have that. And all if for the women, if you've been using Gotukola, G-O-T-U-K-O-L-A, in a new study, Oregon Health and Science University, it improves your memory, reduces amyloid beta pathology in your brain, and activated antioxidant response pathway, meaning it helps protect your brain and turns off all those neurotoxic reactions that can lead to Alzheimer's and dementia and other conditions. That's Oh, and by the way, for all the people in this audience who are suffering from frailty, University of Palo Alto in Spain, resveratrol, R-E-S-V-E-R-A-T-R-O-L, is the key to reducing elderly frailty. Now, you can drink red wine, but you'd have to drink about 20 cases to get what, you know, the amount that you could get in a just capsules in a day. Just take the capsules. It helps you maintain your muscle performance, reduces frailty, and all that's important. We are 21 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear from, we have two episodes today that we're going to play for you. I will also have, if time permits, I'll have a special in-depth investigative report on Anthony Fauci. That you'll want to hear. But if I don't, then I'll do it tomorrow. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Regarding children, the only reason you would want to treat a child is if you believe in child sacrifice, or even the voters are. If you want to be mocked of children, like a carbon, it's a very good reason to give them the shot. Otherwise, there's no necessity. Let me explain. Anytime you evaluate any therapeutic, you need to look at it from three perspectives. Is it safe? Does it work? And do you need it? Just because you have a capability doesn't mean that you have to use it. There has to be a medical necessity. There has to be a need for it. You look at the CDC, the statistics for children under the age of 18 that are healthy, the survival rate is 99.998% survival rate with no treatment. Just like Dr. Yudin said, the influenza virus is more dangerous to children than COVID-19, and he made an estimate that per million, 100 children would die from the vaccination. I feel the number would be significantly higher, and I'll explain to you the rationale for it. So if you have a demographic, can you hear me?
We hear you excellent, doctor.
If you have a demographic that has no risk of dying from an illness, why would you inject them with a poison death shot? Now, let's see if this thing works. The two countries in the world that are most vaccinated its citizens is Israel, a high, like 85% rate of vaccination, and an island nation in the Indian Ocean called Seychelles, also over 80%. Both countries are experiencing a Delta variant outbreak. So let me ask you a question. If you vaccinated the majority of your population, why are you still having an outbreak? That's number one. Number two, why would you even give a third shot of the same stuff that didn't work the first two times? All right, that's whether or not it works. And let's talk about safety. Now, this is the real issue. There are three levels of safety or death that we need to look at. One is acute, one is subacute, and long-term. Acute, I'll define from the moment of injection till 3 months. The number one risk of the shot is blood clots, just like Dr. Yudin said, according to the Salk Institute. By the way, everything I'm saying, I will defend with documentation, and please don't take my word for it. You should do your due diligence. And I can provide to you proof for everything that I'm saying. According to the Salk Institute, when a person gets an injection of these vaccines, quote unquote, the body becomes a spike-producing factory, making trillions of spikes, which migrate to the endothelium, which is the inner lining of your blood vessels, and it's basically little thorns on the inside of your vasculature. As the blood cells flow through it, they get damaged, they cause blood clots. If that happens in the heart, it's a heart attack. If that happens in the brain, that's a stroke. So we're seeing the number one cause of death in the short term is from blood clots, and most of it is happening within the first 3-4 days. 40% is happening within the first 3 days of injection of this poison death shot. Now, the other problem is that it's causing myocarditis or inflammation in the hearts of children, and young adults, I'm sorry, in the hearts of young adults. And the third problem, which is the most disturbing, is according to the New England Journal of Medicine article, their preliminary data, the miscarriage rate in the first trimester, woman gets vaccinated in the first trimester goes from 10% to 80%. I want you to understand what I just said. The miscarriage rate in the first trimester of pregnant women when they get vaccinated goes up by a factor of 8. That's preliminary data. It may change with time, but I'm just telling you what it is as of today. That's the smallest of the problem. The second problem is the subacute death issue, which is the following, that the animal studies that were done with these vaccines show that all the animals responded well in generating antibodies. When they were challenged, however, with the virus that they were immunized against, a large percentage of them died. And when that was investigated, it was found that their immune system had killed them. It's called something antibody-dependent enhancement or pathogenic priming or paradoxical immune enhancement. But the point is that a lot of those animals died. So you can make an argument, maybe human beings are different. My answer to you, maybe. However, those studies were not done. You are the study right now. The Pfizer CEO said Israel is the biggest laboratory in the world. And so those long-term studies to rule out, Dr. Luc Montagnier, who won the Nobel Prize in Medicine for the discovery of HIV, said that this is the biggest risk to humanity and the biggest risk of genocide in the history of humanity. And so the risk of a ADE reaction in human beings, which happens later, has not been ruled out. So my question is, why would I vaccinate someone with a potentially destructive, lethal substance without ruling that out first? And the third component here is the long-term consequences. There is definite evidence that it affects fertility, damages ovarian function, that it reduces sperm counts, number one. Number two, definitely increases the amount of autoimmune diseases. Who knows over time how that is going to reduce lifespan? And just last week, a paper came out showing that increases the risk of cancer. So any way you want to look at it, whether in the acute setting where it causes blood clots, inflammation of the heart, and miscarriages, in the midterm subacute setting where it can result in a pathological, disastrous immune reaction, or in the long term, whether it causes increased autoimmune diseases, cancer, and infertility. Now, that's a big concern. Actually, I will say it this way. In my opinion, the current Israeli government is a Gilgal of Joseph Mengele. They've permitted human experimentation on their own people. And I'm going to tell you, I hope this basin is a little different, maybe not, but I know I finally understood what Chazal say, that if you see Tzuras and Klal Yisrael, you should look at the Dayan Yisrael, Masechta Shabbos. That if you see trouble in the Jewish people, you should look at the rabbinic leadership, because if the head is diseased, what do you expect of the body? So I beg of this basin to put the interests of Klal Yisrael above politics and anything else that may alter your opinions. I received daily death threats. I risked my life, my career, my financial life, my reputation, almost my family, everything, just to sit here and tell you what I'm telling. So I'll just summarize it, that there is no need for this vaccine. And there's actually no need for anyone, and I'll explain. Children, I already told you, they have a 99.998% chance of getting better.
By the way, to get the longer version of this, and he's sitting before a group of rabbis, and he says ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, vitamin C, quercetin. He goes into all these ways of helping the body early on, and even preventatively, prophylactically, and the science has supported this. Hundreds of studies in the peer-reviewed literature now support this. In fact, the latest one just came out today. Just received it about 5 minutes ago. Quote, It goes into depth about for just a dollar a pill, you can get ivermectin. Quote, for $1 daily, a double-blind ivermectin study reveals COVID patients recover more quickly, are less infectious. A double-blind Israeli study has concluded that ivermectin, an inexpensive antiparasitic widely used since 1981, reduces both the duration and infectivity of COVID-19, according to the Jerusalem Post. The study conducted by Professor Eli Schwartz, founder of the Center for Travel Medicine and Tropical Disease at Sheba Medical Center, looked at some 89 eligible volunteers and then went gave them 50% received ivermectin, 50% received a placebo, and then talked about the substantial results. All right? Of the people who were infected, quote, by day six, 72% of the treated with ivermectin tested negative for the virus versus 50% of those who received the placebo. So, in fact, meanwhile, quote, just 13% of ivermectin patients were able to infect others after 6 days compared to 50% of the placebo. Huge statistical improvement if you use ivermectin. But Anthony Fauci and those in charge want to sell you drugs, expensive drugs. They don't want you taking something where you could see this is not a pandemic in the sense that they're calling it that, and you have far more control over the outcome than what they'd like you to know. In a few moments, a special in-depth report, Anthony Fauci's Unscientific Manifesto, Richard Gale and myself. But right now, Richard Gale is on the phone because I received a couple of emails, and I'd like to address them from individuals in the audience who were listening to the last program last week, and they heard that that a lot of doctors were saying, absolutely, they've never isolated and purified the virus, therefore there is no virus, therefore there is no, well, there's no problem out there. You know, we don't have a problem. In fact, the latest one is from Humans Are Free, quote, bombshell health and human service documents, CDC has never isolated any COVID-19 virus, and then, quote, no isolated certified reference materials for COVID virus, PCR tests that find positive results for COVID merely the result of amplified instrument background. FDA admits PCR tests were developed without any isolated COVID-19 virus samples, so they simulated the virus. Virologist Judy Mikovits confirms common coronaviruses, monkey viruses fraudulently labeled COVID. Dr. Jane Ruby explains the lack of any viral isolate and why the pandemic is based upon coordinated science fraud, and it goes on. And this is going viral. We would like to offer a response. Ours is not based upon opinion or information off the internet. It's based upon actual science. Richard Gale's here to address this for you. Richard?
Hi, Gary. So, there's a handful. There's a group of these doctors and researchers are arguing that they there's no virus, that it's a hoax, and their argument's based on the fact that they're claiming that they can't get samples of the virus. Okay, but then they're drawing to this conclusion because they can't get the virus, therefore it doesn't exist, which is very faulty logic. I mean, there are tons of things that are controlled by governments and laboratories around the world that I can't get my hands on either. But that doesn't mean that they don't exist. With the Ruby piece, she was making a statement that it was through the Freedom of Information Acts, and that they were saying that they don't, and were trying to get the sequencing or get information whether they actually sequenced. And the answer came back, no. But, and here's the thing, it was relying on a PCR. Well, in genomic science, we never use PCR. Okay, that's just a simple fact. It's that it's when they did the sequencing of the Human Genome Project, okay, to sequence the entire human DNA, no PCR was used during that for any of that. When I was in the genomic industry, it was there were other technologies that were being used. So it does not mean, therefore, that the human genome doesn't exist or that it's a hoax because it wasn't done with PCR. There were other technologies that were being used, such as the gel sequencing, and, which was the much cheaper method. And we used a proprietary technology called high throughput hybrid sequencing. It was like these robotics. They were about this. We had a dozen of them about the size of a ping pong table that would sequence about 1,000 samples. Each given one was do about 1,000 samples at a time. We were sequencing up to 1 million tissue samples a month. And at the time, we had the world's largest proprietary database of gene sequences. Even today, those technologies are obsolete. The main one is being used as a Sanger sequencing method that all these people that are trying to discredit that there's a virus that probably don't even know about. And then back in 2013, that was superseded by what's called next generation sequencing, or NGS, which is a deep sequencing for sequencing DNA and RNA. It's going to revolutionize genomic research. You could sequence the entire human genome in a single day compared to the many years it took to sequence the human genome back in the 1990s. And the only problem is it's a very, very, very expensive technology. Laboratories just don't simply have this. And these people, individuals that are trying to do accurate sequencing, don't have access to many of these new technologies for sequencing. So, but in terms of just if anybody wants to know that there's, whether the sequences exist, you could just go to the National Library of Medicine's website and download the genome and the protein sequences and their annotations for the SARS virus. You can, if you're really, really into this, you can access 411,000 complete genomes for coronaviruses that have been isolated from human hosts. And if you want to just focus on MERS, well, we could get 258 data sets for all this. And there's 3 data sets taken now from human hosts for the Delta variant. You're going to sit through, hundreds and hundreds of pages of just looking at sequences of 4 amino acids. And since the National Library of Medicine is run by the U.S. government, so therefore we shouldn't believe anything come from the U.S. government. There's the GISA ID initiative that promotes the rapid sharing of data of all the influenza viruses, the coronaviruses that are causing COVID. And their database includes all the genetic sequencing related clinical and epidemiological data associated with human viruses. And if you don't like that database, there's the Genomes Online database system that has 441,000 organisms with all their genetic sequencing, 17,000 viruses, 354,000 bacteria. Oh, but maybe we don't trust that one. So let's go to the GenBank that has 11,000, almost 12,000 virus genomic sequences and 163,000 bacteria, and I could just go on and on. This data is everywhere to be found.
Richard, you've made the point, and this is one of the reasons people tune into this program, because you have a science background in genetics, genetic engineering. I am a scientist. So we take our research seriously. We look carefully. And unfortunately, these other people out there just seem to be wanting to jump on with something that they should have, in my opinion, taken their time and passed it through to see whether or not it's legitimate or not before scaring people. Thank you very much, Richard Gale. Now, I'm going to start this now. I hope I can get it all in. We have this posted. And I also want to mention that next Thursday, I think it's next Thursday, you can go to GaryNall.com. You can download and get a ticket for the international premiere of Last Call for Tomorrow. You can also see the trailer. You can see the reviews of 12 of the best minds in the world. You can get all the information you want and why this is so important that you watch it. We'll all be watching it together. It'll be a live presentation, and I'll be doing a commentary answering questions afterwards. So that's next week. On the, but I think it's the 18th. at 7 o'clock at night, and you can watch it over the internet. Go to GaryAnnell.com for that. All right? Now, it was Thomas Szasz, someone who I knew and respected, one of the greatest psychiatrists in American history, in his The Second Sin, which was way back in 1973. He said, formerly, when religion was strong and science was weak, men mistook magic for medicine. Now, when science is strong and religion is weak, men mistake medicine for magic. For those who have managed to hold on to a thread of sanity amidst our government's surreal handling of the SARS-2 frenzy, Szasz's quote drills down into the dark basement of the medical fantasies, fabrications, and deceptions. And this misinformation now being preached from the pulpits at the CDC, National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, the World Health Organization, and presidencies throughout the developed world, perhaps the most mistaken magic at this moment is the promise about COVID-19 vaccines, the repeated mantra that the science is now sealed, that they are safe and effective. We are harangued that unless we get vaccinated, the virus will continue to spread. Those who refuse to are threats to public health safety. In light of the actual evidence, this is voodoo medicine at its worst. It is the paragon of pseudoscience and woo. It also illustrates our health officials' callous disregards towards even looking at all citizens, young, old, ill, pregnant, and saying, what will happen if they get the vaccine? And this stubborn, unsound belief has reached criminal proportions. Indeed, every effort should be made to investigate and evaluate the available medical science before slipping into either of the two opposing camps, those embracing irrational conspiracy theories and those adhering to official medical magic. We must also take into account the real-life empirical evidence and professional accounts of physicians in the field. Of course, not all conspiracy theories are false. The U.S. government's Tuskegee syphilis experiment was a conspiracy that was real, as was the CDC's intentional whitewashing of its own research showing a vaccine autism association. In an earlier investigation, we enumerated many documented examples of the CDC's malfeasance. Now the agency manipulation and falsification of research and data convinces us that the CDC and its sibling health agencies no longer warrant our public trust. The current conspiracy theories about SARS-2 virus, as well as the government's response, raise very legitimate concerns among the emergence of a growing conspiratorial fundamentalism. Such conspiratorial thinking is largely based upon uncritical, priori assumptions that everything issued from the medical establishment is an orchestrated sedition to wrestle democratic control, personal freedoms, and civil liberties away from citizens. There are other alternative explanations to be weighed. For example, it might simply be the case that those leaders calling the shots are simply horribly delusional and have forgotten the basic principles of every science course they took in college. Medicine has been hijacked by entities and those entitled authorities to create what we can now call medical fundamentalism. And they're being endorsed by Anthony Fauci at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, the CDC's Rachel Walensky, Bill Gates and the World Health Organization, Gabby. They refuse to budge from their zealous, religious-like love affair in the value of its own research. Similar to the vicious feedback loop, these biases reconfirm and strengthen a vested authoritarian control over the narrative. Meaning there's only one truth, their truth. No other truth matters. But what if your medical doctor working in the front lines, emergency rooms, in critical care, and you see what works and what doesn't work? You see how to save lives. Doesn't matter. Can't do it. We'll take away your medical license. What both sides fail to realize is that each is empowering and inflaming the other. Unfounded conspiratorial illusions, such as those being promulgated by trackers of invisible Illuminati and pedophile cartels, as well as the inquisitional dogma of the government's medical fundamentalism, both contaminate the discourse and narrative. Both are equally destructive, and these are just the basics. They're not looking at science reaching plausible facts. They don't need the science. They've already made up their mind. In Washington, the widely accepted methods of scientific inquiry, including inductive and reductive reasoning, have been mauled by the political and economic agendas of conquest and rule in the name of science. Its odor is reminiscent of the stench that wafted through the halls of science during Stalinist era in the USSR. This fanatical frenzy has more in common with the Crusades' marching orders of God on our side than objective scientific investigation. Its anti-evidence-based platitudes are no more than grist for the mill to feed massage statistics such as COVID cases and adverse vaccine reactions to a thoroughly compromised media, particularly the armies of the irresponsible journalists at the New York Times, Washington Post, MSNBC, CNN, PBS, NPR, BBC, The Guardian, and The Daily Beast. Over the course of the pandemic, we have been at loggerheads to make rational sense about the outright stupidity that infects every single level of our federal health agencies. It's not always easy to distinguish between intentional malice or simply blind ignorance and gross ineptitude, even among the most highly intelligent and professional people. Remember, if you make a mistake at the CDC or the FDA or you're on one of their panels and you come down on the wrong side of promoting a particular drug or vaccine or medical device, there's no consequence. If your vaccines were to kill every person on the planet, there's no consequence. They're identified. How is it possible then to have any reasonable, open, and intelligent discourse on the safety and efficacy of a given vaccine or medical product if there's no consequence to being wrong? And right now, if you're in the media, no matter who you target, no matter who you erase, no matter who you shame, no matter who you cancel, there's no consequence. American medical science has failed to evolve beyond the scientific fundamentalism launched by Thomas Huxley in the mid-19th century. Huxley, famously known as Darwin's bulldog, is properly regarded as the father of a growing aberration within the biological sciences that he termed the church scientific, or what today is known as scientism. Scientism is a vicious, dogmatic form of scientific materialism taken to a radical and farcical extreme. It might best be defined as an excessive belief in the power or value of science, but not a belief. It also is a form of secular imperialism and expansionism, as it was Huxley's ambition to see science displace religion as the world's universal belief system. At best, human biology and medicine should be regarded as soft sciences. They lack the rigor of the hard sciences like physics, inorganic chemistry, and engineering and mathematics. In fact, there is ample evidence to suggest that the practice of medicine is not a true science at all. Authentic science makes every effort to observe and investigate very carefully that which it is trying to understand. I gave you an example earlier. If you have, in just a short period of time, if you have 10 million Americans dying from cancer, and all of them used your approach, wouldn't reason suggest that you pull back and say maybe something's wrong with our fundamental understanding of cancer or the immune system or patients? But no, that is never done. It's just who's got the money, who's got the research, who's got the patents, who's got the drug, sell it. But what if it doesn't work? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Profit is all that matters. Authentic science is different. It doesn't exclude anomalies that might challenge prior partiality, prejudices, and conflicts of interest. After we can appreciate the legitimate questions raised by this premise, we can realize the media's blather, quote, to follow the science, to get vaccinated, to surrender yourself to useless PCR and fraudulent testing, to wear masks and obey lockdowns. It is a dangerous bromide. there is no consensual data aside from groupthink to convincingly validate any of these orders. In 1892, the Canadian physician Sir William Osler, regarded as the father of modern medicine, was a co-founder of the now prestigious Johns Hopkins Hospital. Sir Osler believed that medicine may never become a true science. Quote, "The practice of medicine is an art based upon science," Osler wrote. "Working with science in general, it has not reached, perhaps never will, the dignity of a complete science with exact laws like astronomy and our engineering," end quote. He further posed the question whether there can be any authentic science in medicine. Quote, "Yes, but in parts only, such as anatomy and physiology," end quote. In other words, if a body doesn't move, breathe, or have a heartbeat, medicine can commence with real scientific inquiry and evaluation. That's the subject of pathology. One stark example of the anti-science employed by drug and vaccine makers is the reliance on placebos in double-blind clinical studies. To realize how a placebo is incorporated and understood by the medical establishment is rather comical. It has long been believed that the gold standard for conducting randomized controlled trials is to test for the efficacy and safety of a new drug or vaccine against a placebo group. Unless new products are tested with a control group receiving an inert, meaning just generally sugar pill or saline solution, the study cannot be given much credibility. The majority of vaccines currently administered in the United States were in fact never tested against a valid placebo group. Why the CDC and the FDA do not require this of vaccine makers remains a weird mystery. It is not just bad regulatory policy, it is terrible science. When a trial placebo recipient has a positive outcome that is similar to or in some cases identical to having taken the actual drug or vaccine, there's no way to quantifiably measure the non-pharmacological mechanisms that brought about this result. This led Dr. Ted Kapchuk at Harvard-affiliated Beth Medical Center to postulate that many positive results of clinical trial participants receiving the actual drug may also display a placebo effect. The same is equally true for vaccine trials. In other words, although we are told that the Pfizer-Moderna COVID vaccines are approximately 95% effective based upon data after comparing vaccine and placebo groups, the actual effectiveness, the real effectiveness, may be much lower due to placebo effects among the vaccine recipients. On the other hand, a nocebo may account for the remaining estimated 5% of vaccine recipients. In either case, scientists have no means, they're clueless, at their disposal to determine whether antibody immunity is induced by body-mind activity or the vaccine in any given individual. This absurd irony is that if one were to ask a random sampling of 1,000 federal health officials and scientists, physicians and clinicians, drug company executives, and university medical school professors to explain the actual mind-body mechanisms contributing to the placebo effect, there would be 1,000 different answers or a chorus of shrugged shoulders. How scientific is it that for almost every human clinical trial required to bring a pharmacological drug and vaccine to market, modern medicine relies upon a principle that has yet to be understood? That's just dumb to the bone. Consequently, vaccine-friendly data that makes mainstream headlines is based upon pure, unadulterated ignorance. Skeptic medical materialism's hypocrisy is further compounded when the placebo effect is used in a disparaging context to discredit natural, non-conventional medical therapies. To jump to such conclusions, medicine has yet to rely on anything other than metaphysical realism as its starting point. This is where modern medicine departs from being a true science and enters a make-believe world where we find its evidence standing on shaky grounds. So let me give you one example. For a long time, many years, thousands upon thousands of patients were treated most successfully at the Tri-State Healing Center using herbs, homeopathy, zeolites, psychological counseling with Dr. Donald Mullen from the Albert Ellis Center, homeopathy, one of the best in the country, even holistic dentistry, Amir Gadol, intravenous vitamins. We had phenomenal results, reversed AIDS in 18 patients completely, seroconverted negative, total health, and 1,200 regained total health but still remained HIV positive, end-stage breast cancers, reversed, dementia reversed, Alzheimer's reversed, Bell's palsy reversed. And what did they say? It was a placebo. You see, that's what you're dealing with. If they don't understand something and they don't understand how someone reversed it without their medical knowledge and their orthodox therapy, it's a placebo. No, it wasn't a placebo. A recent anomaly during the current COVID vaccine trials last autumn violates conventional standards. Listen carefully to this, because this is important. The placebo group of controls were not carried through to their full conclusion. Contrary to common sense in clinical trial protocols, the placebo participants, those getting the non-vaccine, just injected with a saline solution, were vaccinated long before the trials were completed. In effect, the vaccine companies wiped out any potential clinical trace to properly observe and evaluate long-term adverse vaccine events. In addition, the vaccines are being administered indiscriminately aside from very small selected populations. Physicians and immunological experts now admonishing Fauci and government institutional mandates that are raising legitimate medical concern that vaccinating individuals who had already contracted the virus could put these persons' health and lives at risk. So if you understand what I just said, the control group that received the placebo were all told you received a placebo, and then they went and got vaccinated. Well, then how can you say that it's effective? You've just destroyed completely, 100%, the basis of your entire study. Why wasn't this headlines? Why weren't they called before Congress? That's how game the system is. We're one half through. I will complete this on tomorrow's program, the full article. Anthony Fauci's unscientific manifesto is there for you to download and read. And also, please do not forget to go to GaryNall.com and download the information on the upcoming major film premiere. And all I can tell you is I'm every single day, 7 days a week, I get information on environmental issues from around the world. So I know what's going on in Siberia. I know what's going on in Greenland, Iceland, the Antarctic, etc. You better know what's coming, because it's coming. And it's coming almost everywhere. Shouldn't you know what to do? I think so. So go to GaryNall.com, sign up, and be there when we do the live world premiere. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.